Welcome to the first episode of the MBSA podcast series. I'm Tim Murphy, Executive Director of MBSA, and I'm excited to begin this series with you, where we hope to educate and inform you of news and updates from around the building supply industry. Each episode will bring you an interview with a member of our association who is on the leading edge of business and innovation in our industry. Our very first podcast is brought to you courtesy of Matree. Matree provides on-trend interior finished products designed to help you create beautiful and inspirational spaces inside your own home. If you're interested in a product portfolio from Matree, you can connect with Midwest Sales Manager Kyle Marshall, great member of MBSA, over the phone at 734-660-2797. Our first episode features an interview with Mike Dykstra of Zeeland Lumber and Supply, Zeeland, Michigan, who is here today to talk about the recent acquisition of Zeeland Lumber by USLBM. Welcome, Mike.
Thanks, Tim. I appreciate it. Great to be with you here virtually. And I have a special place in my heart for the MBSA. As back in the day, they say not too many years ago, the Indiana and Michigan associations merged to provide a lot of value in a very successful multi-state organization with the Midwest Building Suppliers Association. Under your leadership, it's been fantastic. So great to see you.
It's great to see you, Mike. I can remember those early days when we had those meetings in your conference room in Zeeland, trying to figure out if this was going to work and how it was going to happen and all that kind of stuff. But those were some fun times. They really were.
Absolutely. We had some strategy sessions with many of the people involved from both the Indiana and the Michigan side, and with people from your group facilitating in and coming together to build on that strategy. So yeah, those good times.
It was a fun start. I hope I get to do that once, at least once more time in my career.
Exactly.
Well, as we start the subject matter for today, Mike, can you walk us through the process of this recent acquisition, kind of from start to finish, roughly, and how it will impact business for you and your Zeeland family?
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. First, before we go into the acquisition, just a little background on Zeeland Lumber. Zeeland Lumber was founded in 1947 by my wife's great grandfather, and it remained a majority family-owned business for multiple generations. And then over the years, as the generations moved on, we ended up with a fairly large group of family business owners, approximately 50 minority owners, without a clear shareholder consolidation strategy. So as I reported to a board of directors, the board was responsible for shareholder concerns. And as you can imagine, with that large of a shareholder group, there were diverse wants, needs, and desires from the business. That said, we existed well under that ownership and management structure and set on a path to grow. And that path to grow around 2010 was to grow both geographically and with manufacturing value added by adding truss and wall panel manufacturing. So we executed the strategy, and by way of numbers, in 2010, we had one lumberyard location and approximately 100 employees in Zeeland, Michigan, serving the West Michigan market. And we grew to six locations, two in Northern Indiana, two in Detroit market, two in West Michigan. And all in, we had three lumberyards and three truss and wall panel manufacturing. So that happened kind of from 2010 to, roughly 2000, well, to last year. So during that process, we had business valuations yearly, and we discussed over the years when we might sell the business. So in 2019, we put some time into research if now could be the time. And in November of 2019, we hired an investment banker advisor firm to run the process of the sale. We hired an accounting firm to perform a quality of earnings report and basically validate our numbers. We put together a marketing document, and with all of our financial information, we set upon a quiet marketing effort, a limited auction, they would say, to sell our business, led by this, by our investment banker advisor partner. So by the end of February of 2020, so about a year ago, We had several interested parties with values that were in our target range. We were just beginning to schedule facility visits in management team meetings when COVID-19 hit and travel bans came and the world was different as we know it. So we ended up putting a pause on the process because nobody knew what was going on, if the world was coming to an end or anything. And we paused the process for March, April, and May of last year. And then we woke up in June and we kind of realized the building industry is coming back fairly strong and is showing a lot of strength going forward. So we reached out to the interested parties. And most of them were ready to re-engage and move forward with the process. So that's what we did. And so then after several meetings, some virtual, some live, and some facility visits, because now we're into July where we could have some travel and some outdoor dining, we were able to secure multiple letters of intent, LOIs on the business. And after some negotiation, we landed with USLBM. And so we're very happy with our new partner. And that was kind of the middle of August of last year. Then we had roughly 75 days of due diligence and we closed on November 2, 2020 and announced to the market that we are now owned by USLBM. So we believe it's been a real win-win, both for the family business members and our minority partner, that we're able to make liquid their investment and cash out. And for the business going forward that can thrive now with a new ownership entity.
Excellent. Mike, I really appreciate the fact that you also chose MBSA as a communication channel for the early release of that information to the rest of the market and the rest of the world. That was nice to be part of that process for you.
Yeah.
As you were going through this whole thing, which if anybody has ever gone through the process of selling a business, that each step begets 10 others, right? And it's just always one after another thing. At what point did you realize that this really was a worthwhile opportunity for you to pursue?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tim. And you're so correct. This it was an incredible learning experience for myself and others that went through the process. Because there's a lot of factors and everyone has a bit of a different look on the business and a little bit of a different understanding and perspective of strategy and how this could go, and just a ton of discussions. But when we realized that after that first round, we knew what our targeted price range was, after having annual valuations, which was a kind of a big deal that we had performed annual valuations. So we kind of knew where our business value stood. And then when we got through the first round and those the valuations came in, the offers came in really close to those valuations. Well, that kind of took price kind of off the table, or at least we knew that we were going to be in that range. And that happened early on in the process. Then other considerations, were the cycle of the market. From a timing perspective, we were on a long growth curve with a potential recession coming. Now, we didn't know at the time when we were going through the process that we were going to get this global pandemic induced recession. And we didn't know what the impacts of that were going to be, but there were some people on our board of directors that were saying we've had a pretty good run and a recession's looming. So you always want to be selling from a position of strength and on the high side of the market, not necessarily on the low side. So that was a factor. Other factors, were going to be how would the new ownership group think about our team, our community, our brand. And we ended up being very fortunate with USLBM. Their perspective is that local autonomy and decision-making is important. Our brand is important. They're not taking off our sign and our logos from our trucks and putting a different logo on them. They're saying, you're the team, you know the local market, your brand is worth something, you're vested in your communities, like many LBM dealers are in our region and around the country. So we're going to just kind of let that go and accentuate that. And then where we'll help is with, you know, some of the back office, insurance, banking, HR decisions, policy, things like that, and allow the leadership to focus on the sales and operations. So when we saw that that match, we really thought we had something here, and it was a worthwhile opportunity to pursue.
Excellent. So I'm going to ask you now to kind of assume a 5,000 foot view of the industry and get your perspective on what you think are some of the recent developments and innovations that you see as important as the industry moves forward.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I mean, there, as you know, that's a wide open question there, and there's a lot of things, a lot of change happening. But I believe, you know, they say a crisis either accelerates or decelerates a trend that's already happening. And some of these trends that were happening, you know, the pandemic kind of just kind of accelerated them a little bit and put them on the forefront. But I view them as longer term trends, and I'll talk about two of them. One is what in the whole realm of fully integrated offsite construction. When you look at a company like Entekra in California, I think they have a pretty good model of what that looks like. I recently heard their CEO speak about what they're doing, I think we have to think that potentially a good portion of wood framing in maybe 10, 15, 20 years, you know, won't be built like we do today. We may have more building happening in factory settings, like wall panels, trusses, floor cassettes, and then being assembled as components in the field with a very tight process. Some of that's happening in a loose way, and in various ways already now, and in many ways throughout the country. But I think that will be a continuing trend when you see that around around the world. Europe has a strong history of doing it this way. And with the labor trade constraint, you know, we're losing carpenters all the time, and not many people are getting into those trades. So the labor constraint will be a long-term thing. And you can really expedite construction and take some timing efficiencies out of this process. So I think the whole thing of building more in factories and in components and assembling on the job site in a different way is something we need to keep our eye out on. And then the other is, you know, the use of technology. Everyone talks about technology. I think our industry in general has been a little slower to change on technology trends, but there's so many amazing ways to embrace technology now in our industry, from how we engage with customers on digital platforms, how we integrate our ERPs for ease of quoting and ordering. I think we should realize that the next generation of builders, you know, they grew up with Amazon point and click ordering. And I think they will increasingly want that experience on a B2B situation as a builder customer of ours. So there's the customer piece, and then on technology, there's logistics, warehousing. We have a warehouse management system where we pull loads off of scanners, not paper anymore. That we installed that a few years ago. You know, and that's, I mean, you see that in other industries of distribution, but it's pretty rare in our industry. But it's helped us be more accurate on our order pulling and also be more efficient in our use of labor. So that's just one example in warehousing. Logistics, obviously, there's GPS and picture capture on job sites, but all the way through supply chain purchasing, all of these areas, I believe, will be blown up somewhat and with greater use of technology. So there's a huge opportunity here, and it hits really every facet of our businesses.
That's an excellent point. You know, The whole sort of Amazon phenomenon really has affected a whole lot of industries, not just LBM, and a lot of professions as well. So I always knew that the LBM as an industry would be on top of it, and it's and I'm not wrong, and it's nice to see that. It's nice to see that there are many players in our industry who are really embracing this this change and making these innovations last. So it's great to see that you're doing those things too. I'm going to go a little bit more personal here on a professional level and ask you, what are some of the go-to sources that you use to stay up on industry trends?
Yeah, good question, Tim. Of course, I'll have to start with the MBSA email blast with all the valuable information that you provide the membership, Tim. Shameless plug, as we use, utilize the association for some of that information gathering, and Tim and his team do a great job of putting that out to the membership. And then, the other usual sources are, the LBM Journal, Pro Sales, and some other industry publications, for sure. Those definitely keep us up to date. But I think just as important is in that information sharing and, being a student of the industry and reading the trade journals is the network developed over the years. Peers that are leaders in non-competing markets, suppliers in our industry provide a wealth of information. And these networks for me have been very valuable over the years to share market intel and but also to share ideas and gain feedback. I believe one of the biggest attributes of our industry is how collaborative we are and how we are open to win-win conversations, sharing information to help each other out. There's several roundtable groups throughout our industry that openly share with each other on how to be successful. I mean, the MBSA through networking events and golf outings puts people that would otherwise sometimes be competitors in the field right next to each other and, sharing ideas and having fun and maybe having a drink or two and talking about business in general. So I just think our industry is a very, very collaborative industry, which has always made it very attractive.
I agree with you. I'm really looking forward, and I know everybody else is too, but I'm really looking forward to the time very soon now, I hope, where we can sort of climb out of the computer screen and climb back onto the bar stool.
Right.
And do business like we're used to doing.
Yeah, I know you miss that as well as a lot of us do, Tim, because you're very social, and there's something about those gatherings where, those chance encounters and those sidebar conversations where things happen. So yeah, that's a good thing.
And the interesting friendships that were made in 10 minutes at an annual meeting or a golf outing, and then these people become very, very close friends. And that's great to see. And you see that in LBM quite a bit. And I think that's our very nature. So I'm glad to hear that. What are some of the secrets to success that you've had in your career? In other words, what if there are secrets to success, what have been some of those guiding principles that have taken you to where you are now in your career?
Yeah, thanks, Tim. I mean, first of all, I'll start out by saying that, without the people around me, and we do things as teams, and no one organization is bigger than any one individual. And I've just been blessed to be surrounded by a lot of great people and have a lot of within the organization and have a lot of great influencers and network outside of the organization. So I owe it all to everyone else. But if I could, reflecting on that question and think about, what I think, I can bring to the table and have maybe, I think working with the team on strategy and vision with a focus on being relevant to the customer, but being, different, distinct from the competition, having that focus and bringing a strategic view, as you said earlier in a question, thinking about it as 5,000 feet, or we say sometimes 10,000 feet, let's We're also busy working in the business. Sometimes we have to take a step back and work on the business. So that has led to some conversations that we've been able to organize and execute around those strategies. I think also being open to change. We have embraced change in our industry, and embracing, you know, technology that we talked about before, but then other things that have been brought before us, we've been able to, you know, have a change mindset. And I think the other thing could be, a metric-driven approach. They say, you know, you manage what you measure. So in operations, what is our on-time and in-full rate, for instance? In sales, where are our leading indicators? What's our quote pipeline? And, you know, there's productivity measure metrics, safety metrics, employee engagement metrics. You know, we've been able to develop scorecards in every area of the business, you know, to manage where we should be focusing on. So these are just a few things that I think I've been able to learn over the years with a lot of great people in my life, and all this leads into really, intentionally building culture, because we all know we can't really get anything done on our strategy without a great culture and everyone working in the same direction. So that's a constant. It's easier said than done, and it's a long-term game, but it's something that we all try to work on as leaders.
I know I'm going to put you on the spot here for just a minute, but tell me one thing that you wish you would have known at the start of your career that you know now. What's that one thing that you wish that you would have known right away that may have taken a while to get?
Well, Tim, that's a great question. I could think of a ton of things. So I guess if you're going to say one thing, I would say, to the mindset towards failure. So to expect failure and then to learn and grow from it. They say the road to success is full of potholes and things don't work out as planned, right? So instead of beating yourself up or just having a mindset that you're, you know, thinking that, well, you have a plan, you have a budget, this is how things are going to go. I've often said a budget is wrong from, you know, on January 1, the first day you start going, because it's an educated guess and any kind of strategy. But then you got to change and then things happen and adversity comes into play. And I guess that's kind of it. I mean, just to more embrace failure and adversity and really learn and grow from it. Those are hard lessons. But looking back, I think that's probably, if you ask for the one thing, it's kind of that.
Okay. What about this coming year, that your very first year, as part of the LBM, USLBM family, what one thing are you looking forward to most this coming year?
Yeah, there's a few things, and I would say, with the change with USLBM has brought a lot of opportunities. So one opportunity is one of our crosstown rivals, Standard Lumber and Supply, was previously purchased by USLBM approximately 5 years ago. So our opportunity now is to work collaboratively with what was once our crosstown rival. So that's a really interesting dynamic, you know, when you think of, in sports analogies, you know, how you think about the opponent and then now you're in the same locker room and, in a sense. So although we will exist still as two brands in the market, Zealand Lumber and Standard Lumber will be, and there's definitely, things that each brand excels at differently than the others. So there is opportunity to work collaboratively and integrate some processes behind the scenes. So that's, I think, something I'm looking forward to. And adding on to that, to push through some growth opportunities, potential startups and businesses that we can kind of add on through this time with a partner that has capital to grow and strategic and operational expertise to help us. So yeah, it's kind of a new day. So it's exciting.
And finally, one last question. Since you were part of this from way before the get-go, how has your membership in MBSA supported your business and your career?
Yeah, I guess, the MBSA, has supported our business through, networking opportunities, which we talked about a little bit, educational opportunities, programs that have allowed us to, buy better or get connected with resources and political advocacy. And, some of these things that we've tapped into a little differently, maybe on different fronts, but, I guess on the networking side, because that's where, for me personally, I feel has been a huge benefit. I've met some people, they're just amazing people in our industry. And through that association, we've had some, have had some direct impact on our business, and some suppliers that we met through the MBSA. It's been a great fit, a win-win, and it's we've been able to engage with them. Obviously, the educational opportunities have helped our business, especially some of our employees grow and develop some necessary skills. Political advocacy is always important. And it's just good to know that the MBSA has got our backs on that. It's not something that any of us can do, it seems like, very effectively individually. So to be part of an association that kind of covers that at both the state and national level. So those are a few things. When I go back, I think, the network has been very, very valuable. And of course, without the MBSA, I wouldn't have met you, my friend, Tim Murphy. So that is a very direct benefit, for sure.
I appreciate that, Mike. It's a interesting thought, for example, and it just seems like yesterday, I know it does, but it was about 7 years ago, maybe a little bit more than 7 years ago, when we first got together in Zealand with Joe Collings and my wife, Leslie, and Mark Zemrowski, and we kind of hammered this whole thing out. And it was just a fun thing to do. And I'm so glad that it's grown and it's prospered and we've been able to affect positively the lives of our members. So I'm honored to be part of it. And I'm honored that you're part of it too. So we appreciate that. So as we wrap up this episode of the MBSA podcast series, once again, want to thank Kyle Marshall with Matree for his ongoing support. Kyle has been one of those members that has supported us and sponsored us since day one. He was one of the very first people to hop up and be a perennial sponsor. So we appreciate Kyle and all the good folks at Matree. So with that, Mike, thanks for your time. I know you're busy, but thanks for the time that you've given us today. I wish everybody a safe season. I wish everybody speedy recovery and getting out of COVID mode and back into normal mode so that we can come together once again as MBSA. One of the things we've always said around here in the office is that even though we might have suspended our meetings, we have not suspended our mission. Mm. So with that, I look forward to the next meeting with everybody. Take care. Have a great day.
Thanks, Tim.